Welcome to this episode of Pages and Panels. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle Welch, joined by my co-host, Tim. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
Obviously, this is kind of an exciting episode for us and kind of a new one. A lot of times we're delving into the process of story creation, like making comics and the artistry behind that. So really excited about this one. We're going to be talking to Dimitri Logothetis about the amazing new movie, Jujutsu. So, I mean, first, how are you doing? Obviously, we kind of did that before, but we're recording now.
I'm good, thanks. Just enjoying the weather. It just, the fog just lifted here in Marina Del Rey.
Nice. Yeah. Is it? Yeah, I mean, you guys are, I've always asked Tim, but like, how are falls out there? I mean, because it's like my favorite, like, we're obviously recording around Halloween time. So like fall, that is the one nice thing about like upstate New York is like fall's the best. How is it like out that way?
Well, you never know. I mean, Tim is down in San Diego, so he knows what I'm talking about. You could have a little bit of fog and a little bit of cool weather if you're by the beach, but you know, everybody's out in Southern California because they like the fact that the sun is out all the time. So Thanksgiving could be 80. You never know.
Oh, jeez. So I think the first thing is, obviously, we're going to be talking about Jujutsu. I think when people see kind of the trailer just dropped when we were recording it like 2 days ago or so, and when people kind of read the summary, and I think one of the biggest grabs for me was the pitch of like a martial arts science fiction movie, which, I mean, outside of maybe like Matrix and like Equilibrium, this is like obviously not a whole lot of that. And I've seen in like previous interviews you kind of talked about like your interest in pursuing that kind of genre. Like, how did that story kind of develop for you? Because obviously you're directing it, but you're also involved in the screenplay and writing it. And I know it was previously like a comic. So how did like this kind of story for you develop into what we see in the final film?
Well, I mean, I was a martial artist in my 20s, and I studied with some pretty significant martial artists. One of them was Ed Parker, who created and developed Kenpo Karate. And and so I got a black belt from Ed Parker, and he trained Bruce Lee, and he also trained Elvis Presley, and he trained a lot of celebrities and stuff. And the other one was a fellow by the name of Howard Jackson, whose style is Tang Sudo. And Howard was a two-time world champion kickboxer. And so I was a fairly above average martial artist, but I really liked the discipline and I really liked the philosophy behind martial arts. So when I moved on into directing and television directing, primarily action directing, that discipline worked really well for me. And then also being able to design and cover interesting and unique fight sequences was something that that I developed. And so one of the things that I was fortunate enough to do was to relaunch the Kickboxer franchise, which was made famous by Jean-Claude Van Damme in 1989. And I was able to get the sequel rights, and I launched Kickboxer Vengeance about 4 or 5 years ago. And I brought Jean-Claude Van Damme back, and I starred Alain Moussy, who is a six-degree jiu-jitsu master and a wonderful martial artist in his own right. And so that did very well for us. And then the worldwide audience wanted another one, and so I did Kickboxer Retaliation, which not only did well in terms of the audience, it was a rather unique film, and I brought Jean-Claude Van Damme back for that one as well. But the critics liked it. And normally, in the Western world, you don't get critics that like martial arts films. Mm-hmm. They view them as a lesser category of film. And, you know, in the East, martial arts films are about the best film you can make because you know, it involves loyalty, it involves putting yourself ahead of family and friends, and being heroic, and so and having a code, whether that code works within the law or not, it's doing what's right. And so after I did Kickboxer Retaliation, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he is a distributor here in the States, and he said to me, he said, you know, you should consider doing something with science fiction martial arts. And I thought that was a good idea. And so I called my writing partner, who I'd worked with on for many, many years in television, Jim McGrath. And I said to him, I said, why don't we write a comic book? And he said, why? And I said, not because we want to get into the comic book business. I said, but because I'd like to see it. And I said, it's the only way for me to be able to visualize a movie. And I said, might as well get a really good artist. And so we did. And I found an artist back in by you in New York. And I think he teaches drawing, and specifically drawing for comic books and graphic novels. And so we made this comic book. And then I was able to take a look at it and think about it for several months. And I thought to myself, you know something? This is going to be a really cool movie. And so that's where the where it started, its inception. And so I went on and I wrote a script with Jim, and then we rewrote it several times, and then I started to discuss it with a lot of the distributors around town that found a lot of success with Kickboxer Retaliation. And most of them thought I was out of my mind, and they were probably right, you know, because listen, you know, when you're dealing in the martial arts world with a story, you're already pushing the envelope into fantasy, you know, and so now you throw in there science fiction, and you're pushing the envelope further into fantasy. And so I thought to myself, well, why not? If you're going to have fun. And what I try to do is I try to use real martial artists all the time, and I try to deliver to the audience the kind of stuff that I used to see when I was a kid. And I try to speak to the little boy and girl and everybody, no matter what age they are. Because I think that martial arts represents a real superhero. It's about as close as you can come to on the planet to becoming a superhero without having to do all those special effects and wire work and stuff. I mean, if you train hard enough, you can be pretty impressive as a martial artist. It doesn't matter what age you are. And so, you know, and it also feeds in most of us how at one point or another in our lives we were bullied. And we were able to you know, if you live through the eyes and of your hero in a film, you can see that you could possibly overcome a bully yourself. So that's really how this movie came about.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we're lucky enough to watch a screener of the movie prior to this, and it very much feels like best I could think of was like, oh, it's almost like a Predator meets Enter the Dragon, where there is this like force after them, but it's like you know, fight after fight kind of making the way through like this temple. Like, it is very progressive, and then but the way you've approached the action and the story in it, like, you're, I think, so brought in because of the way you approach the action. A lot, like, almost all of it's wide shots, like it is like single takes, like. So, like you said, you more so than I think like the superhero type things, like, you get invested in the character because you follow the fight, you follow the visual storytelling that you present in it, and it's so much easier to kind of like root for them as you're watching it. And that's always love about like martial art films, and like, you know, trying to like convince my wife, like, you gotta watch these. Like, I was showing her The Raid. I was like, you gotta watch The Raid. It's so good. Like,
that's a good one too. You're right about that.
And I was like, you just get so invested in these characters because, like, again, you know, it's not like these like close up like punch, like, you just can see everything they're doing. Like you said, I think one of the interesting things is it's all things people, you know, are pulling off themselves. So you just like feel so invested in as you watch it.
Well, you know, most audience members, it's interesting that you pick up on that. Most audience members don't know. And so they're watching, and I try to use a single camera as often as possible, meaning that I don't cut at all. And I try to take the camera as far as I possibly can, because, you know, Alain Moussi, again, he's an exceptional martial artist. And so when he's making his moves, and, you know, here's a man who's 6'1", at 205 pounds, and he can do a front aerial and a back aerial. He can run up the side of a wall. And that's
a back flip kick at one point. Oh my God.
That's his. I mean, and you know, I don't, and everybody always says to me, they said, oh, you know, you took the wires out. I go, there were no wires. I said, if you take a look at the outtakes, you'll see that we did that about three or four times. He slipped a couple times. And then he said, just give me another one. And then he finally nailed it, you know, just like a gymnast would. And so then you see Tony Jaa. I mean, look at that oneer that we have in there with Tony Jaa. It's crazy, you know.
I wanted to ask, just like, what goes into like the choreographing that entire one take fight scene?
Well, first, you know what I do. I've got a wonderful team that I developed in Thailand, and I started with kickboxer, the first kickboxer with these guys, and they're an incredible team. And so what we'll do is, like, right now I'm preparing another movie called Man of War, and they'll start working on the action sequences right now, okay? And they'll start to conceptualize with me, and we'll talk about them. And these guys will actually, you know, shoot them, cut them, send them to me to look at. And then I respond, and I say to them, do it differently. I mean, they'll actually light them. They'll actually prepare props. They'll actually put in there special effects, like guns are firing and stuff like that. They're amazing. And so we work on them, you know, months in advance. We take a look at them. And you can only pull this kind of stuff off when you have real martial artists. Going back to, you know, movies that we all grew up with, Enter the Dragon, going back to any of the Jackie Chan films, any of the Donnie Yen films, you need to start out with a martial artist, because I think the audience expects your lead to be a true martial artist, and they want to see them be able to pull this stuff off without being doubled, okay? So if we start with that vantage point, and then we create and design a unique martial arts sequence, when the audience sees and is watching this, roughly, I've always heard from people that about a minute to a minute and a half into it, they'll come to me and they'll say, oh my God, I noticed that you never cut the camera. Was he really doing all that? I said, well, if you notice that I never cut the camera, yes. And then you'll also see that the Thais, they're some of the few, you know, martial artists on the planet, along with the Chinese, that want to take a hit. So I actually have to get them to back off many times, because they actually want to make it real by taking a kick, taking a punch, and so I have to be very careful with them so that they don't hurt themselves, you know. But you'll see that kind of stuff, and you know, look at the kind of athleticism that Tony Jaa and Alain Moussi bring to this, as they're flipping on top of walls and jumping off of walls, and I mean, the athleticism is just superb.
He does, I think, on that one take on the roof, he does like a double kick contact, like off of a person, which was, again, insane. And like, there's such a kind of, again, I think skill in obviously in like in the writing, and but then the direction to kind of, you know, get that and make that work. Because I think also like in a different approach that might not work for you. Like, how does that, like, when the focus of the movie is obviously kind of these set pieces and kind of progressing through them, I mean, how do you approach then, like, pacing a movie to still kind of tell the story you want? Do you, is this, like, clear for you kind of, like, how long you want a fight scene to last? Because, like, I mean, I would be like, okay, let's watch Tony Jaa for, like, 40 minutes. But obviously that's not going to work in, like, the plot
well,
of the movie.
I'm with you, though. I agree. I try to cover and create a really unique fight sequence, and that's what I focus on, number one. because that's the movie we're making. And and then I take a look at it and say, oh my God, you know, this is 40 minutes long, so I have to make it. I have to make it work. But no, I try to do everything I can possibly do, especially with the actor martial artist, because they also want to deliver some entertainment, and they're more than willing to do things they haven't done before, you know. So those challenges are taken very seriously by them, and that's why you end up with the kind of sequences you do.
I've heard you discuss this in kind of in other interviews, and you mentioned a little bit in the beginning, kind of the, I guess, the Western's acceptance of these type of movies, and how sometimes they're seen as like, you know, B movies here in the States, versus like over the East, where again it is very like much. I mean, again, you look at like kind of where Jackie Chan was before coming here and doing like Rush Hour movies. Like, do you see a scenario, especially with like such a glut of superhero movies now, do you see like a scenario where these type of movies or movies that focus more on the actual real action could make their way into it? I think even like, you know, there was a little bit of a push when, you know, Daredevil had that like, you know, single take hallway scene, and I was like, okay, like now we're kind of getting there. But like, I mean, it still has kind of been there. Do you see like a scenario, or do you hope there's like a scenario where these movies kind of make it more into the mainstream?
I do. I mean, and as a matter of fact, I'm glad you brought up Daredevil, because I thought that those action sequences in Daredevil were beyond amazing. And I know they had a wonderful stunt team on that, and they were just, they would take off and they would, you know, luckily he wore a mask. And so the guys that doubled him were just terrific martial artists. And you see the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. And if you're entertained by it, what I'm finding is that a number of non martial arts fans are getting into the films. You know, I'll get ladies that'll walk up to me and say, you know, I would never normally watch a martial arts film, but boy, this was really entertaining and it's a lot of fun. And in addition, you know, you have, again, you're delivering a code, you know. So for a young audience, they actually see heroism, and they actually see that they are selfless, or your lead is selfless in the film. And the fact that the hero is overcoming odds that nobody is able to deal with, but yet takes them on, I think in and of itself is a good message to put across.
I love the addition in this movie of Juju Chan, who was fantastic in the movie, but again, kind of the approach to have a more, like, again, having a female on screen doing amazing work, and then kind of, again, having that there, like, the realistic approach that, again, you can see all these people as actual heroes doing these, you know, real acts was cool.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, and again, you can see, if I had to have actors and actresses cover all those sequences, I would have never been able to finish the film. Because they're complex, you know. So it would have taken at least twice as long to shoot the film.
Talking about, shooting the film. So you're originally from Cyprus. So was that like a little homecoming for you to film the movie there?
Actually, I'm not. I was born in Athens, Greece, and came to America when I was about 6 years old. My parents immigrated here when I was about 6 years old, and so I'd never been to Cyprus. I was invited to Cyprus by the ministry, because they invited a number of filmmakers. They invited about 50 or 60 filmmakers from all over the world to announce this special cash rebate program, because they wanted to compete with a lot of the European countries that are offering cash and tax incentives for you to shoot movies there. And so I found Cyprus for the first time, and the advantage I had over a number of people is that they speak Greek and I speak Greek. But other than that was the first time I'd ever been there. And You know, the great thing about Cyprus is it's a pretty gigantic island, and it has some great terrain, and I believe it's on the same latitude, I would think, as Los Angeles. So the weather is great almost all year round.
I think somebody's going to have to update your Wikipedia page then, because that's what it's going off of.
I think, again, talking about the setting and the terrain, like, again, utilizing that in the sequences, for you guys, again, I think obviously the appeal is the sci-fi elements and just in case, I don't know if it's funny, but this entity that is, you know, you're tracking them, is, I think, a really great design. And again, like, you could easily, I think, I don't want to say mess it up, like, especially with that being the crux of the movie and this thing. I mean, what went into the design of him, again, kind of knowing that, like, that was really going to be a big selling point? Was that something you had early on in the comic, like, his design? Has that changed much since then into when you came into the actual, like, suit design?
Well, if you take a look at the classic science fiction films that you'd see late night, you know, even when I was a kid and before my time, you know, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and and of course later on you had Alien, and you know, I think if you take a look at Alien and you take a look at the fellow who designed it, I think it was Geiger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really my inspiration. The 50s films where they had aliens attacking and stuff, I wanted to come up with a foe that was undefeatable, you know, and I wanted to come up with somebody that, at least in folklore, had been known to be doing this for thousands of years. And so jiu-jitsu, although everybody thinks of it as Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, it's goes back to anywhere from 100 to 200 years before Christ. So they think that it might have been it began in Japan, and it was a style that was a derivative of judo that had weapons, and it taught the peasants how to fight off invaders, you know, so that everybody would be trained. However, it's not really known. It could be Korea. When you really try to locate the origin, it's not as specific and no, you know, Kung Fu, you can locate the exact origin of. Karate, you can locate the exact origin of. But jiu-jitsu is one of those things where you can't. And so I thought to myself, boy, wouldn't it be neat if we're going to do this in science fiction, that we might as well make it so that Brax is the one that delivered this a few thousand years ago, and he has set it up to create a competition of sorts, and all he wants is to be able to fight champions that are willing to face him to the death. And so he looks for excellence in fighting, and that's really the original concept. Now with the huge success of the trailer, the distributors anticipate that we're going to have a very, very big demand. And by the time you air this, I guess the movie will be out. But they are asking me if I can come up with Jiu-Jitsu 2.
So I mean, yeah, obviously not to spoil anything, but it is like a perfect, I think, setup for especially the last line of the movie as to, like, coming into Jiu-Jitsu 2. And we talked about that, obviously, the movie coming out, and, you know, obviously the world we're kind of in currently with COVID and everything going on, that how does that to you, like, launching a movie during that? And again, I think this is a movie that is, like, will 100% benefit from seeing it on screen, because I think obviously the wide shots, but then you do a lot of amazing stuff with kind of POV action in this as well, which is really unique. I mean, how has that been kind of leading up to it and then kind of anticipating a release? I mean, obviously everyone kind of dealing that. What has that been like with pushing a movie like during these times?
Well, you know, I made this film pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. So COVID didn't really hit until I was in post-production. And around the time that I was mixing the film, suddenly we went on lockdown. And so I had to figure out how to get into a mixing studio in a giant theater and do the final mix. So what I do is pretty entertaining, and it's fantasy. And so if you release yourself and just go with the ride, which is what, you know, kickboxer is meant to be and what jiu-jitsu is meant to be, I think, you know, you can turn off the news and just enjoy yourself for about an hour and a half. And that's what it's meant to be. And you're supposed to be able to just live through the hero's eyes and feel good at the end of it and just say, God, that was a lot of fun, you know. Crack a beer, have a sandwich, do whatever you do. And if I got you to say, God, that was really cool, that was a lot of fun, then I did my job.
Oh, for sure. I mean, my wife, who is, her tolerance already is up there with it being horror season. I like kept pausing it and like running and getting her and being like, look at this, look. I'm like, just see what he did. She's like, Kyle, I don't care. And I was like, but you're missing. I don't think you understand that. And I there's been such a, I don't know, if have you seen, it's been fairly, I think, prevalent now on YouTube, like the Collider video, they're doing like stuntman react videos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those have been a lot of fun. And then like, it has been something again, kind of to see the craftsmanship that goes into it. And I mentioned like the kind of the POV stuff. Was that something, again, mixing up kind of how you're actually shooting these, like bringing something different to the table? Is that something that goes, again, a lot into kind of what you want to get out of this, really? And then this being kind of your own film, and writing it and coming to it, like experimenting more on that, especially kind of the way you're shooting fights with camera angles and POVs?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I used to see on television the old Clint Eastwood movies, and there was a Clint Eastwood movie that he did with a chimp, okay? And it was really cool. It was very, very funny. And there was a fight sequence in there, and it's the first time I saw Clint punch somebody in the face. He actually punched the camera, okay? And then there were some reactions that way. And those cameras, back in the day when they were shooting the films, they were gigantic cameras, you know? So to handhold a camera like that. So I thought to myself, you know what? I haven't really done anything like that. And I think it'd be kind of cool to see punches and kicks, especially with my guys. And so I said to Alain, I said, listen, I said, do you want to do this on top of the wall? And he just started laughing. And he said to me, so besides the fact that I'm actually trying to stay up on top of the wall, he said, now you actually want me to react to a camera coming at me. Because, you know, the camera, if you notice what you're talking about in that particular sequence, the camera moves in and out. Mm-hmm. So it actually switches with Alain. And then all of a sudden he jumps in front of the camera. So it was he had to choreograph around the camera in order to pull off that whole sequence.
I know Tim had questions regarding this too, but obviously kind of, I think a lot of it in burying the lead is like obviously featuring Nicolas Cage, who is like so much fun in this movie. And that was my question kind of to that was, I think kind of Nicolas Cage doing a lot of work recently, and he's always fantastic, but there's times when you can tell he's having like the time of his life. I think recently, like with Mandy and Color of Space, and then I was watching this, like you like can tell like he's like enjoying himself so much making this movie. How did that come about? And then again, kind of working, was that something he really seemed to enjoy doing when he was on set, especially, I mean, getting to do a sword fight with an alien?
Well, you know, Nick, first of all, he's a true professional through and through, besides being an extremely talented actor. And he embraces genre. He's the kind of guy that will show up, which he did. He came off the airplane and literally sat down with me and said, what do you want from me? How can I help move this story forward? And we had a very, very long meeting and talked about character and his character specifically. And then he said, can I go over and start working out with the stunt guys? And I said, of course. And I said, don't you want to, you know, take a shower, take a nap, et cetera? Because, you know, he flew over from the States. And he said, no. He goes, I want to get right into it. And that's the kind of passion that he brings to every part. That's why we all enjoy him so much. And he reminds me very much of a European or a British actor, because he likes to work all the time. Mm. And people a lot of times get the wrong impression of that, you know. But if you take a look at some of the European actors, you'll see that by the time their career ends, they've done about 140, 150 films.
Okay. Yeah, Michael Caine's like in every movie.
Yeah.
Like all the time. Yeah.
But think about it. How can you get good at anything if you don't work? If you're waiting to work, you know, once every 2 or 3 years, which a lot of our actors and actresses are guilty of, at the end of your career, you've only made 20 or 30 films. What are you doing the rest of the time, you know? And so he said to me, he said, I just do a lot better when I'm working and focused on work. And he said, I just feel better. And consequently, you can see how he gets better and better every single time, because he brings 100% to every single character that he does, you know. And he did have a lot of fun. He, fortunately enough for me, he had studied both jiu-jitsu and he'd studied martial arts for a few years. So when I was able to put him together with the stunt guys, he was able to get in and out of the stunt sequences pretty well. And he did an awful lot of stuff himself, which was surprising to me. With the exception of the really, really complicated stuff where he might have hurt himself.
So I wanted to ask, I read that your original first choice was Bruce Willis.
You're a little off mic, Tim. Can you get closer to the mic?
Is that better? Yeah, okay. So I read that your original first choice for the film was Bruce Willis. Now with the movie complete, do you only see that role as Nicolas Cage?
Absolutely. I think that Bruce would have done a wonderful job, but I think Nick, you know, took it to another level. And I'm so happy that that Nick made the film. And we're looking to do a couple of other projects together. We're looking to do one project together next year as soon as he's available. He's finishing a movie right now for Lionsgate out in Budapest. So we're talking about another project that I have.
For something we always kind of talk about with storytelling a lot, but and you alluded to it kind of, but when viewers go to see this movie, whether they see it in theaters or at home or anything like that at this point, what do you hope they kind of take away from the film, not only in terms of the story, but also, like, again, kind of what your kind of goal is for a movie like this?
I think if I can get a couple of wows when they're watching the film and really enjoying losing themselves in the story, number one, and then enjoying the physicality and athleticism of our leads, and then just saying, oh my God, that they really did all that. And I think if, you know, because that's what I walked away from when I would sit there and I'd watch some pretty amazing stuff growing up, when I saw, you know, Jackie Chan and I saw Bruce Lee, I would just go, wow, that was really cool. And if I can get that, I'm happy.
He definitely, I mean, got that from, again, me. I know, like, yeah, Tim watched it first. He texted me and was like, this is amazing. And then I was like, oh, shit, I got to get home. And I watched it. I do have a final question. I wonder if Tim's got any questions left.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to ask, the scene transitions with the comic book pages. I know you said you made it as a comic book first, but did that influence your use of those in the movie?
Yeah, I just wanted to keep you in that. I just thought that they would be kind of cool to make sure that you stay in that world, and to keep your mindset in the fact that we are in a comic book, and that's where we're supposed to stay. And I didn't want to make it the scene transition campy comic book, but I wanted to keep you in that world.
And I obviously enjoyed the look of those, especially the open, because like a lot of times in movies, again, I think this movie is extremely well paced and like so much fun, like it's just nonstop, and I think that kind of helped do that, because obviously like you don't have to like have travel scenes, you don't have to have a lot of that, like those were taking place in those panels, and then you did a lot of like you know, world building within those, so like you were able to kind of then just focus on the characters, focus on the fights, and focus on like the progression, and it like was so I think well packaged in that way.
Thank you. You know, we call those travel scenes where you see characters walking in and out of doorways and going from one place to another, too much shoe leather. So I try to take all that shoe leather out of a film.
So normally we have a final question that kind of will tie to what we're covering. And I think, so we're recording this in October. Obviously, it will kind of go up in November when the movie drops. But it's, you know, Halloween season, spooky season. One thing I was familiar that I had remembered was you directed the 1988 Slaughterhouse Rock, which I enjoy. I think it's so much fun. I think it's like a American Werewolf, like a punk rock like that. Like it's a lot of fun.
Oh my God, you remember Slaughterhouse Rock?
Wow. I do. I was telling Tim I had watched it, and then when we were like, oh, we're setting up this interview, I was like, I know, I've seen the Kickboxer stuff, and I was like, that seems familiar. And then I looked it up, and I was like, yes, I love. That's a lot of fun. For listeners, and again, because it's kind of October, obviously this will go up in November, but what are some of your favorite, I know like you have martial art recommendations, what are some of your favorite horror movies?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm right there with the classics. I love The Day the Earth Stood Still, the remake. Mm-hmm. I also love Alien and all of the Aliens. I just think those are terrific films. You know, and the final Alien, what was it called? I think it was called Prometheus.
Prometheus.
And if you look at that alien that they find inside the spaceship, who's sort of, I guess, in suspended animation before they bring him to life.
The jockey, I think they call him. Yeah.
Yeah. If you see him, you'll see. You know, a lot of people accuse me of Predator, but I think that's really much more the way that I went. And again, going back to The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original Day the Earth Stood Still. So it was those kind of films that that really turned me on. In terms of, you know, horror, I'm not really a big blood and guts horror kind of guy. I prefer the real creative horror films, you know. Mm-hmm. So those are my favorite.
Sir, very good choices. And I do like, I think what works has always scared me as a kid about Alien and Aliens was kind of the faceless nature of it. Like, and you get that with, I think, Jiu-Jitsu. Again, like, it's Predator in the sense that there's, you know, this thing kind of challenging them into a, like, a hunt and combat type thing. But he's very, I mean, faceless in the sense, like, you say, he's very unstoppable. He just keeps moving. He has, like, a very, I don't know who was, and maybe that's something we can give credit to real quick, like, who was in the suit, but they are very, like, great at kind of this, like, intimidating, like, just Terminator.
Well, I think originally it was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, no, in Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh, God. Wait a second. It was, hang on a second. It was Brian Terran, I think. Hang on a second. He doubled, he's a wonderful guy. He's from Australia. And he doubled Aquaman. Hang on a second. Let me see if I got this right. Just want to make sure, because I loved his work.
Like I said, he was, because again, you like, that's so important. Obviously, not only to be able to do the fighting he was, but like just the presence, in the way he.
Yeah, it was Ryan Terran.
Nice.
He played Brax, and he's an exceptional martial artist. He's a big guy, and he's going to be in the next film that I do as well.
So for listeners, again, obviously, you know, when you're listening to this, the movie's out, you can see it in theaters. But if anyone wants to find out more about you and your work, like, what is the best way people can do that?
I think if you go to Dimitri's site, Dimitrisite, I think it's also, it's both on Instagram and on Facebook, I think. No, actually, I've got my own webpage. So if you go to dimitrisite.com, you can see what I've done and what I'm doing. I've got a number of projects now that are coming up that I'm preparing for. And of course, now everybody is pushing me to try to figure out a story for Jiu-Jitsu 2.
You gotta get to work on it. It's, again, I think once the trailer dropped, people like went nuts, and they're going to enjoy it. Like I said, any of this stuff, if you're listening to this, watch it. Kickboxer Retaliation is so good. It's a nod, but I will say go Slaughterhouse Rock is a lot of fun.
It's so funny that you brought that up and that you've seen it. That's great. I appreciate that. Listen, you know, as of today, and again, you're recording this in October, the trailer's been picked up by so many sites and translated. It's only been out for about 4 days, and I think we're already hitting about 3 million views. And to put things into perspective for you, normally an independent feature will get about 40,000 or 50,000 views. Okay, so it's taken off. So obviously, people really like the subject matter. I read people arguing over it, you know. So I get you get a lot of cynicism on the internet, as you know, and a lot of negativity. But you'll start seeing people arguing with them, and that in and of itself, I know that the film is going to be very successful, because when people start arguing, everybody wants to watch it so that they're right. That way they can argue about whatever it is their point of view is, you know.
Yeah. And like I said, I you mentioned kind of the respite movies provide, and being able to go see it and have fun and just kind of enjoy yourself, and like 100%. And it is, again, it's just the type of thing where, like, the second Tim watched it, he texted me, and then I was texting him while I was watching it, and like, that's this type of movie. It is so much fun. It is so well shot. It's beautiful, and like, again, the type of fights you don't get, like, that's not something you generally see now. And I think I've seen it like as like a nod to like 80s action. Like, again, this, you know, wide shot, single takes, these amazing athletes, like, it's so much fun. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time to watch the film and being supportive. And hopefully, you know, we'll talk again after the film is out, guys.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
That was this episode.